Hey, what's up, listeners? This is the Derek Dreamer Show on surewhynot.com/Derek Dreamer, and thank you for taking the time to listen to this broadcast. And if this broadcast is a blessing to you, please share with others. Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, whatever you have, please share with others. We live in an age of information, and it's always great to share news and media with everybody. And I tell you what, the alternative media is the way to go, and what an impact it's making. Here in a few moments, I'll be bringing on Stan Dale from standale.com. He was with me last year. We have an interview last year, I believe it was last May, and we're still number one in regards to audio, and what a blessing that is. Everybody on my Facebook list, same thing. Please share this message as gone. Before I get into with Stan Dale, my friend Brian Moran, he's an author, a Christian, a businessman, and he has a free ebook, okay? And so if you look at the description here below, with this message here, look at the description below, there's going to be a link. This link will take you to a free ebook. It's a 63-page ebook, and it's basically, it's a book about how to improve any area of your life, financial health, fitness, family, relationships, in the next 12 weeks. Now, I know a lot of us, we like to do things which is called annually thinking. That is a yearly thinking where we have goals for a year. And the thing about it is we have those slumps where at the end of the year, we like to try to rush everything so we can meet our quotas and deadlines for the end of the year, whether it's business or whether it's personal. But simple fact is we have the apathy. So if you notice in business, for example, what's the end of the year? It's that big sales, push, and a lot of revenue happens at the end of the year. So likewise, if you can condense it down, and with his formula that he has, you can have it 12 weeks. It's called a 12-week year program, and it'll be just basically like Christmas every day. And so it's all about motivation, and he's went through a lot. He's a good Christian man. His heart is on fire for God. And like I said, free ebook, and look at the link below. And other than that, I have Stan Dale from standale.com. How are you, Stan?
I'm well, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Well, it can actually be otherwise here in sunny Colorado. I mean, it's a beautiful day out.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, you know, Stan, I listened to you on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie, and I enjoyed you guys' interviews. And so what really intrigued me about the interview was one thing. I heard you talked about Zechariah Sitchin, and that up to last month, which was February, that you just started kind of believing his stuff. And what was weirdest, Stan, is that I was the same way too. I didn't really pay attention much to his work, and I'm like, okay, whatever. And the week before you did the interview with George Norrie, I went out to the bookstore. I bought two books of Zechariah Sitchin, and I started reading it and looking at it. And then I heard that interview, and it's like, you know, you're like, wow, Zechariah Sitchin, and you were like basically talking about him, and you didn't believe him up to last month. I thought, man, that's a coincidence. Because I'm starting to see things, and this year starting out has been very, very unique. Within 2 months, Stan, so much thing has happened. We start off the year with fishes dying, birds falling out of the sky. We've got Mideast problems. We've got solar flares. We've got polar shifts where Tampa had to shut down their airport. I mean, the list can go on. And so with all this stuff happening, it's like, geez, and then NASA said that there's possibly a mass or whatever it is that's bigger than Jupiter or four times bigger. And so it's just a weird year, Stan.
Yeah, it is. It is, Derek. You know, I didn't probably address the issue about Zechariah Sitchin on George's show to the full extent. Mike Heiser has and another fellow have investigated Sitchin's translations, and they reckon that they are incorrect, and that he padded it and added stuff, and that may or may not be true. But the fact that there's another planet out there, when NASA starts talking about it, and when I find evidence of it in the perturbation or the bothering, if you wish, of the orbit of Neptune and Uranus, and when my own calculations show there is a planetary orbit, a stable orbit out there that would have a 3,600-year orbital time, then I have to say, well, maybe Sitchin wasn't all wrong. You know, I make that proviso when we talk about it.
Yeah, it's if you look at the old Sumerian hieroglyphics or artifacts, whatever you want to call them, they did have planet Nibiru sitting there somewhere. And, of course, they've got an interesting story in regards how the Earth was created. Apparently, Nibiru came into our solar system, wreaked some havoc, came across Tiamat, or how you pronounce it, and with its solar winds and north wind, evil wind, whatever, collided into Tiamat, sliced it in half. Part of it went to be an asteroid belt. The other half was a watery planet. And then, you know, when I studied that from Stitchin's work, do you think that that could, I guess, validate the gap theory?
Well, I don't know whether that's needed to validate the gap theory. You're talking about the one in Genesis?
Yeah, where it says that when God moved upon the face of the waters and everything was void, that the fact is that Schofield, for example, C.I. Schofield in his commentary stated that there must have been a cataclysmic event sometime in the dateless past. And so do you think that the Sumerians had it right in regards, I'm not saying the creation of the Earth, but in regards of their interpretation of the creation of Earth was really a cataclysmic event that caused the Earth to be, I guess, shapeless, formless, or whatever?
Waste and void. Yeah, I do think in that respect I support the gap theory, let's say hypothesis, but anyway, the gap idea, because in the strictest translation of the Hebrew that was used in Genesis about that, the tohu bohu verb meant that the earth had become, it's a past perfect tense, had become waste and void. Now, that means that before that it was up and okay, and I guess not waste, and it was fertile, and this may have been something that the fallen ones, you know, Satan and his guys were actually on the earth that day and did something that really irritated God, and there was a destruction, whether it was some Nibiru, you know, doing it, you know, I don't know. But I do believe that the earth is older itself than 6,000 years. There's just too much geological evidence to that fact. But the age of man, or human, from the Garden of Eden is 6,000 years. So that's a second implanting, I think, of something on the planet. So I know that I'll probably get cards and letters from people that say that, you know, the Earth is only 6,000 years old. But it's catastrophic things. And it might be 50,000 years old. But a lot of things that have occurred just do not occur instantly, unless God puts an age to the earth and snaps his fingers. And I think he follows the rules of his universe when he builds things and makes things happen. So I believe that he let sediments build up, and he planted various types of life forms here, and certainly they've made adaptive mutations. We've seen that in the Bible, even that genetic modification can occur even in the color of goats, you know, by having the pregnant ewes go down, or the sheep go down by the water where the reeds are and gaze upon the reeds, and it changed the coloring to make it more spotty coats rather than solid whites or blacks, you see. So anyway, that's just my opinion.
Yeah, it's do you think that planet Nibiru, I know, I guess the next course would be the year 2900, because of the fact it's every 3,600 years. Now, what gets me, this is what's throwing me off, Stan, please help me understand here, because I've read Stitchin's work, I read two of his books, so I don't know him all the way, but I just read two of his books, but is it where the Anunnaki, I mean, gets off this planet and then jumps back on it and gets, I mean, hops on, hops off type of thing, and something about a hollowed earth, and maybe there's a possibility of Anunnaki living in a planet or something?
Yeah, I did discuss that, as you said, on George's show. The thing that I look at here is, you know, the hard data collected on the fixed stable orbits in our solar system. I found the formula that tells where planets have to orbit. And we have about six orbits that aren't the whole planets at the moment, at least that many. One of them is the one that's out 250 times the distance of Earth from the Sun. That's 250 astronomical units. The distance of the Earth from the Sun is an astronomical unit. And that's the mean or average orbit period out there. Now, a planet can orbit in that orbit and also not be a perfectly circular orbit. It can be like an egg-shaped or elliptical-shaped orbit. And I do believe that we have something out there at that orbit, but inclined, like its orbit is tilted up. It's not like at the equator of the Sun in its orbit. It's up above that, or in our case, down below it at the moment, coming up through it. Now, that planet out there at that orbit, at 250 AUs, that planet has an orbital time of 3,600 years, as close as I calculated, plus or minus 12 years. Now, that does tie in with the Mayan stuff, with the Sitchin stuff. Now, when its last approach was, is the big issue. Was it in 1800 B.C.? Or was it in 1500 B.C.? You know, somewhere in between there at the time of the Great Flood? If it was, then we should be able to see it from the southern hemisphere if it's tilted, you know, at the angle I think it is, between about 23 and 27 degrees. We should be able to see it any moment now if it's not already kind of in the immediate range, but just kind of dark. Some people said it would be a dwarf star, you know, a dark dwarf star, and we couldn't see it because of that. Well, I think that something of that mass would be evident right now with the disturbance of other planetary orbits and asteroids and comets and everything else. So if it's another planet, I think it will not be a dwarf star, but a lighter, much lighter mass planet. And it may be dark. It may not have a reflective index and albedo, you know, that we can see right now until it gets closer to the sun. And if it is approaching from underneath the equator of the sun, you know, the equatorial plane, then there may be some situation that you can't see light reflected from it. However, if it is the planet that Sitchin's work talked about in the Anunnaki and in that whole event, then that planet would be very cold if it was out, you know, as far as it would be in a long elliptical orbit occupying that 250 AU orbit. It would be so cold. I mean, it'd be like an ice planet. Nothing would grow. Nothing could live. And that's why, you know, on George's show, I was talking about, okay, I made a discovery here in remodeling gravity to explain NASA's discovery of a fifth force, a new kind of gravitational force. And that force is what I call containment vortex gravity. And that containment field is like a swirl or a spin or a water going down a drain, but an invisible swirling field like that around every planet, around every star, around every galaxy. You can see it organizing the stars in a galaxy into a swirl-looking thing like it's flowing down a drain in the center of the thing. The gravitational model that I put together is showing that this swirl, when it gets in close to the center of where it would run down a drain if it were water, that the swirl has a top and a bottom to it, a swirl underneath and a swirl on top, and they meet in the middle. Where they meet, where there should be a drain, there's a solid ball. And I thought, well, now let me take this further and see how this works. And I found that the balls, the planets, the stars, the galaxies, will have holes in the polar regions which open and close periodically to allow this containment wave to go inside the core or the planet and form other shells or layers. Now, so when I found that, I cut the planet in half, and if you look on my website at standeo.com, you will see, let's see here, in the images for the show today, for your show, down the fourth line down in the middle, it says hollow earth cross section, and you'll see how I've shown that the containment wave forms voids or like empty shells inside a planet or a star or a galaxy. Now, as a result, the planet behaves like water in a glass when you stir it. The stirring water, if you look at it, forms a tornado or a vortex of water in the glass. And if you pour a bit of sand and a bit of iron filings into that glass and stir it, you'll see that the heavier iron particles settle in a cone first at the bottom of the glass underneath that spinning vortex. And then that's followed by the lighter sand particles, which coat the outside of the iron filings and form a bigger cone. A layer, if you wish. Now, if you're looking through that glass of water sideways, you can even do this just with pepper or something, you know, so you can see the vortex spinning. If you stir it, as it starts to age and slow down, the tip of that vortex in the glass of water starts to rise up and down, very slow period, showing that there is a period, a cycle to that vortex where it has to relieve stress and then it can go back down and so forth. Now, what is happening there in that glass of water, if you imagine that happening in the core of a planet or star or galaxy, is that periodically it winds up tight, and then it has to flip-flop to conserve the momentum, they call it, or the energy of motion in there. And so the core of it flips upside down. This is probably why on Earth that our magnetic core, the spinning plasma inside the planet, every 10,000 years or so does a flip-flop to conserve momentum. And we think this happens in galaxies. Every galaxy has a supermassive black hole in the center of it. And they've discovered in the last 10, 15 years that these supermassive black holes open up at the poles and shoot out gamma ray bursts and all kinds of energy. They shoot out the polar regions and then they shut off. Now, the supermassive black hole in our solar system, Milky Way, is in the process of opening up again. So if you look at the galactic things where polar regions open up and heat and stuff comes out, and then you take it down to the sun, they've discovered there are two polar regions where massive magnetic fields erupt out of the sun at the north and south poles and burst. And if you look then at the Earth and you say, wow, if Earth follows the same pattern, then polar holes could open and close periodically. And if Nibiru, that planet out there, is like Earth and all other planets, then it could have holes at the poles that open periodically, and there could be a race living inside that planet where gravity would reverse and they would walk upside down to us on the bottom side of the surface of their planet, but inside. And they would have a low-grade sun. They would have the core being hot, like our core, and that dull, reddish, yellowish core would supply them warmth and let them grow food and live comfortably inside their planet, as though it were a big spherical spaceship, like a Death Star, but now, you know, just a thing they lived on.
Now speaking of like a spaceship, do you think that that since Nibiru, some projected that it'd be back in the year 2900, but do you think that if there is the Anunnaki living inside this planet, that it is like a spaceship? And some people has interpreted that the Anunnaki came on spaceships and they go back and forth and blah, blah, blah. But do you think that there's a possibility that they have some type of technology within Nibiru that they can control the planet's orbit? And so what would be naturally on course for the year 2900, they can easily manipulate and go backwards, go a different direction, where possibly they could be in our direction for 2012?
Well, look, I don't know. You know, I haven't proven yet that that planet is anywhere close or that it is the one that Sitchin's work highlighted. But the technology that you're talking about to move an entire planet in its orbit would require horrific amounts of energy. And not to say that they don't have that, but the thing that I would look at is that they use their planet's natural orbit. And since they're quite happy, or have been anyway, inside their planet, whenever it comes in close to the sun, it must open up, or they may force the opening of the poles, and they can hop out and fly across to the Earth, visit with us, you know, every 3,600 years. Then when their planet is starting to move back out, jump onto it, go back inside the poles into their interior home, and ride on out and continue life out there. Now, the time that the alleged planet X, Nibiru, would be close enough for us to see and for them to jump in at us with, you know, reasonable expenditures of energy is about 11 to 12 years, as far as I can calculate, from an orbit for a planet in that orbit. It would take 6 years coming in and 6 years going out, and it would enter into our solar system, I think, somewhere close to the orbit of Mars, and dive around around the sun, and then around the backside of the sun, and back up and out, and going back out toward home. Now, they may have technology that easily allows them to jump up to Earth from, you know, millions of miles away, from several orbits away. I don't know, but I do know that the transit time of any planet with an elliptical orbit around a star, as it gets closer to the star, it speeds up hugely, and then slows up way slow, way out on the outer reaches, and turns around, then starts to speed up and fall back toward that star. So, you know, they would have a shorter period of time than, say, say, like 900 years, they'd have a much shorter period of time that it would be convenient to jump across to the Earth from their planet, unless they had, you know, like star drives, that kind of stuff.
Right, right. Now, Zechariah Sitchin said that the Anunnaki is the fallen angels of Genesis chapter 6. Then it gets confusing, because if one believes that, then they one have to conclude that's the fallen angels that was kicked out of heaven. And of course, the Book of Enoch, which is non-canonical reference book in regards to that, goes a little bit deeper detailed. And of course, come out of Mount Hermon. You know, there's a lot of things, Stan. I know my mind works. I go fast with my mind here, but Mount Hermon seems to be a strange place. I mean, you have the fallen angels descended from there. Also, it's located on the 33rd degree line, and the same as Roswell, New Mexico. So there's some weird stuff going on there. Maybe we'll talk about that here in a little bit. But if one concludes that the Anunnaki is the fallen angels, and that the fallen angels, like Jude verse 6 and 7, talks about they're in chains of darkness, then the Anunnaki, if they're in the planet Nibiru or in the core or wherever they're living, they would just be nothing more than demons and alien flesh. What do you think?
Well, I think they probably could be the ones that we speak of as the bad gods, the evil ones. I mean, the Greek pantheon of gods did center around Mount Hermon. I don't know whether you're familiar with the Decapolis cities, are you? Have you ever heard of that? Okay. No. The Greeks built 10 socio-religious cities in Israel, and they centered their location around Mount Hermon. And I do believe that that's where they thought that the Mount Olympus was, where the gods were, where Hercules lived and that kind of stuff. Time passed and the Romans took over, and in the Middle East, you know, the Greeks were no longer there, but they thought the same thing, that the gods with a little g came from Mount Hermon and are descended there and went into mankind and bred with our women and that kind of stuff, which does sound like Genesis 6, which was not a good thing. In fact, I don't really think that the myths and tales that have come down from the Greeks and other older civilizations about the man's encounter with gods have all been, you know, nice and fuzzy and warm. I mean, there have been some pretty horrific, you know, encounters with them. So they don't sound good, and I agree then that I think that they are demonic, or they are the bad guys, if you wish, and that the God of gods, as Plato called it in the Critias and Timaeus debates discussing the legend of Atlantis, that the God of gods, which would be the Elohim in our world, God the Father, punished these beings. He cast, there were 12 of them cast down to the earth in those days, and they were down to the earth, and they were prosecuted by God for what they had done in polluting the human gene pool. And then you had the flood, and all the horrific half-man, half-animal beings seemed to disappear. But yet after the flood, the giants did reappear in the tribes, you know, like Goliath and his brothers, and in Og, the king of Bashan. These guys were between 12 and 16 feet tall, reasonably big things and not normal. So that means that these fallen ones re-encountered mankind after the flood.
Yes. It is mentioned there in Genesis 6. It says, I think it's verse 4 maybe, I'm just thinking this top of my head, but it says that they were there before and then thereafter. So there had to have been like this second wave of a second interruption, if I can say. And from there, you're right, 12 to 15 feet tall. Goliath was 13 feet 6 inches, and he had 6 fingers and 6 toes. Another thing, too, is I find that I believe it's in the Book of Joshua, where Joshua and Caleb, I believe, went to the land of the giants, come back with a cluster of grapes between themselves. They carried one cluster of grapes, which seems to indicate to me some type of genetic modification in regards to food, along with Jude verses 6 and 7, that they went after, that these fallen ones went after the strange flesh. And so, because I've always wondered to myself growing up, why would God kill a bunch of little innocent birds and animals, because there could have been a lot of modification, just like, you know, half man, half human, half plant, whatever, and some weird stuff going on, stuff that was way ahead of its time.
Yeah, I know. The scriptures do say that at the time of the return of the Son of Man, the Messiah, our Messiah, that as we approach that moment at the end of this age, that things will be like they were in the days of Noah before the flood. And in that day, there was chaos, confusion, fighting all over the world. There was crossbreeding, genetic modification engineering all over the world. And that's why the flesh had to be destroyed in the earth. Well, we're seeing that now. We see reports of these gray critters crossbreeding humans, you know, with their own seed, trying to form a new kind of human. Whether they've succeeded or not, I don't know. But the same genetic weirdness, I'm sure, is being done now by these quote-unquote alien grays, which are fallen ones, or even biological robots the fallen ones use. I don't know, because some of the reports the UFO occupants are like humanoid, you know, tall, you know, handsome, and that kind of stuff, and
right.
With slight daily skin. But until the good Lord tells us, or we find out more as they make their presence officially known, we can't be certain. But I do think that a great deception is afoot now.
Right.
To fool us, you know, and I think the little gray critters and the tall gray critters are going to be painted as the bad aliens, you know, which did nothing good for us, and that the human, handsome, you know, taller ones are going to be our saviors, quote-unquote, and their leader will be, you know, the false god.
Do you think that the end times deception would be like, oh, we're inky, and that's my evil half-brother Anil. You know that thing going on with the Sumerians, the brother, you know, the brother problem, and I want to be a god, and I want to rule this, and they got in fights all the time. That's through the Sumerian folklore. So I thought about that. I thought, well, if the Antichrist comes, I mean, who knows what he'll say. He says, well, we represent Anil, we represent Aniki, and we're going after our brother, and blah, blah, blah. And so that's an interesting thought there. You know, another thing, Stan, is a lot of eerie things happened in the 20th century, and I know you're well familiar with a few things I'm going to say. Aleister Crowley in 1917 conjured up ritual magic, and he wanted to open the realm of the seen and unseen, and apparently, based on his own words, he was successful, and he drew a picture of Lamb, L-A-M, and it looked like an alien gray. And then in 1947, you had Jack Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard, who created Scientology, and some girl, they had ritual sex, and they wanted to do the same thing, but go a little bit deeper to find the Babylonian child whore god, or whatever it was, and they said that was successful, and to bring in the realm of the seen and the unseen. And what was interesting, that 1948, Aleister Crowley died, the same year of the Roswell, New Mexico incident, which once again is on the 33rd degree line. If you run it all the way over, goes to Mount Hermon. So just some weird stuff going on, you know? Weird coincidence.
Derek, I don't know that being on the 33rd latitude is that significant at this point, because the Earth's axis has changed a number of times in its existence, and it has a wobble. And so I don't know whether, you know, the numbering of our latitudes was a carryover from the Babylonian time, because it was really in 360-degree increments, you know, the degrees around the planet. So it may have been. I don't know why we have a base 60 in the Babylonian system, but that's the way it is. But if that's not it, then the 33 might have been 72 or 16 on some other number system. You see what I'm saying?
Right, right.
I'm not too excited about things being on certain latitudes or longitudes at this point, because so many changes have occurred in the past. Modern things that are built, recently modern things that are built within recorded history on latitudes or longitudes that were in existence at the time that we know about, then those could be suspect, like the layout of Washington, D.C., for instance, you know, the Egyptian symbols and the Masonic symbols there, that could well be man-designed.
Right.
The thing that we've got to watch for in this deception is, number one, the leader of the deception, the leader of the aliens, this quote-unquote god. Daniel does say that he's going to come and pretend to be a god, and that he will have a secret place out in the desert or in orbit or, you know, under the sea. It doesn't matter where. It just says in Matthew, Jesus says, watch out for him, because he's going to come and he's going to pretend to be me. He's not going to have anywhere near the power that I have as the creator and sustainer of this planet. And he says, if he says, or if they say to you, his minions, the God, the Messiah, he's in the desert, go see him there in the secret place, or if he's in orbit, or if he's, a spaceship or in the ocean, and you have to go see him in the secret place, don't believe it, because I'm not going to hide. When I come, everything that lives on the planet is going to see me like a lightning bolt coming from the east to the west across the planet, all at the same time.
Right.
So don't let an imposter with lower magic, lower technology fool you. And that's the one thing you've got to remember. And we are now approaching that point where the deceiver, God, is going to offer solutions to the people of planet Earth, solutions to the economic chaos, the nuclear war threat in the Middle East, the food shortages, the climate disasters and changes, pandemics that may or may not hit the planet shortly, the earthquakes, the instability of the planet, the solar problems with solar coronal mass ejection. You can name a whole lot of serious critical curves of threat that are making people run around like, Chicken Little. The sky is falling. Someone help us. And this someone is going to be the leader of the first group that manifests officially as our friendly space brothers, aliens, whatever.
Do you think that Lord Mahatreya, or possibly Peter the Roman, which would be the last pope due to St. Malachi's little pope theory, do you think that's going to play any type of role in the next coming years, or any type of deception in 2012?
I think the last pope certainly will probably support the new world leader. Who will be a dictator. There's just no way around seeing that he'll be a dictator, allegedly a benevolent one. And as far as Maitreya, I've been following that too, and Benjamin Cream's reports on it and that kind of stuff, and pictures or photographs or allegedly pictures of this dark-haired, bearded young Messiah, appearing here and there. That may be the case. That may be the fair-haired boy that Satan has picked to rule the world in his name, and it may be a non-event. It may just be something.
So you're telling me that Satan's going to pick a Da Vinci version of Jesus and say, here's Lord Maitreya.
Well, I don't know.
Could be.
People say he's going to be, well-liked. Of course, if that's the case, then we have to rule out Mr. Obama because he doesn't quite fit that bill. But there's two or three guys on the planet that do have my attention as far as what they're doing and saying, which would make them eligible to fulfill prophecy about the one who brings the nations together in a peace treaty, or the one who ratifies a peace treaty of all the world nations with Israel to stop global war. Now, there's another fellow named Nimrod Novik, who is the executive vice president of the Merhav Group of Companies in Israel, and he is definitely not a religious man at all. His religion is certainly more like power and money and energy. He and the president of the company, who was a former Mossad agent himself, have been buying up large amounts of water rights in the Middle East around Israel and Egypt and Turkey and various other countries in South America as well, where they've been buying oil rights. And Nimrod Novik was in politics for a short time with Shimon Peres. And for the first 100 days of Shimon Peres' office as prime minister there, Nimrod Novik did his outlining, his plan, his activity list, if you wish, for the first 100 days of office to cement his office, his duties there as prime minister. In fact, he was so close to Peres that the rumor around Jerusalem at the time was that Nimrod Novik is Peres' poodle because he was always in his lap telling him what to do, and getting strokes for it. Now, Nimrod Novik is a very bright man. He's now 65, 66 years old, something like that. And he's going partially bald, getting gray, and looking like an old guy. Now, I don't know that the Messiah, Maitreya, has to have a dark beard and, dark hair and be handsome and all that kind of stuff. I don't think it says that anywhere in the scripture. But he does bring peace, and he does instill confidence in his ability to keep peace. And he will worship a god of forces, as Daniel said. Now, god of forces means that the leader of the world will worship a god, a super being, who has the technology and forces to bring people into line and they nations into line if they don't behave the way he wants them to. So when you look at Nimrod Novik, there are some scriptures. One book in the Old Testament talks about the Antichrist will be known as the Assyrian. An Assyrian name, name is Nimrod Novik. Nimrod was a city named after the original kind of bad guy that built the Tower of Babel. And so this is this guy's name, Nimrod Novik, even though he's born in Israel in the northern part. He acts like an Assyrian, and he definitely, at private parties with the people we've talked to there, he is against all this God, Bible, holiness stuff. That's almost a direct quote of what he said at the party.
Wow.
And so I've got my own him, I've got my own Obama, but I don't know whether Obama's any more than a good script reader. He just doesn't seem to have the cojones, to be a global dictator at this point anyway.
Yeah, he lost a lot of credibility. I mean, when he first came in, everybody was like, oh, it's got that rock star mentality, but it's kind of dwindling down in the last few months, of course, the last few years, really. But no, I mean, I just keep my eye out on all this. The Da Vinci version of Jesus, it's been prepped into our mind. You go to any churches, Baptists, Lutheran, Episcopalians, Pentecostals, and you'll find the Da Vinci version of Jesus all around. And so people instill in their mind a long hair, blue-eyed, bearded Jesus, and so I wouldn't be surprised as a deception, okay, that they'll use that image to say, hey, I'm Jesus, use Project Bluebeam, and here comes Lord Maitreya, and CNN ran some commercials of Sherrod International, which said that, hey, there's going to be a time of turmoil, Lord Maitreya will come down and basically bring peace, and he is the Christ of the Christians, Buddha of the Buddhists, and Allah of the Muslims, just basically that God to everybody. And so a lot of propaganda. Another thing too, Stan, is that Super Bowl. I want to talk about this, but Super Bowl Sunday, I noticed one thing is that the commercials in regards to the movies was all alien-based. I mean, Steven Spielberg had, I guess he has two movies come out this year. One of them, they won't tell you what the script is about. And and the other one's Battle for Los Angeles, and the other one's Transformers. The other one's like, I guess, I forget what it's called, but it kind of reminds you of the Third Kind, Return that he did in the 70s.
Oh, the Third Kind.
Yeah, and so it's like, it was amazing to see that all the movies they shown on Super Bowl Sunday was alien propaganda. And of course the Series V is back on, and it's just this alien hype, this alien agenda. And another thing, Stan, I noticed that you've had this on your website, but we've breaking records in regards to UFO sightings in 2 months.
Yeah, we've had more in this 2 months than any other time in the history of recorded UFO sightings.
Isn't it amazing, Stan? I mean, we leave 2010 and it's like we come into 2011 and it was like biblical chaos. I mean, it's like birds falling out of skies, fish is dying, UFO sightings everywhere. And even people's attitudes, people's mindsets, everything's just different. And in these 2 months, Dan, we're breaking records in weather and UFOs and everything you can think of. And it's scary to think what's the next 2 months going to be like. And 2 months after that, I mean, it's just crazy. Things that would normally be spread out through a whole year, it's been compartmentalized into 2 months.
Well, Derek, if you think about it, the impetus behind that might be is that the powers that be trying to organize the planet, the masses, don't want the masses to have time to think and reason and be witness to or be corrected by any of the elements of their population that might see what's happening and try to expose it. That's why we have to pre-expose it now. Last year, in fact, in February, when I put the last edition of Cosmic Conspiracy together, the final edition, I knew I had to do it then to get it out and into the population worldwide so that it was before the Great Deception hits, before it comes to solve all these crisis curves that are going to be accented in 2011. I just felt that it was right upon us.
That's what you and I talked about, Stan, because I read your book, because you sent me that book with our first interview together last year. And it's a very good book, and if people want to order it and go buy it, go to standeo.com and buy it. Trust me, buy it. It's a great book, hands down.
Well, so share the information with people.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got to get it out because That's why things are moving so fast, I'm sure, and why they're being reported so rapidly and in such density on the mainstream media. They want people to feel fear of these various threats, and they want people to be ready to accept a solution, even though it might mean giving up nationality. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's giving up that sovereignty, giving up freedom, and all this other stuff for this one world garbage they're spewing. Yeah, I'll tell you what, I mean, everything is pushing for that. And I can't tell you, Stan, I mean, Stan, you're a lot older than I am. I'm 29. And I can't even think of a year like 2011. I can't go, well, back when 85 or 1994. I mean, 2011 has been something else, and it's got to lead to something. And the biggest thing I'm trying to warn people about is the deceptions. I mean, another thing, too, that I want to talk to you about, Stan, is, look at Zechariah Stitch, and I'm not trying to promote the man because he was a Christ rejecter, but some of the stuff he was talking about. I mean, look at the Sumerian history, okay? They've got the brothers fighting. You've got the aliens and the Anunnaki come to Earth and creating the races, and they're leaving, hopping off the planet, and things like that. And it was interesting. Did you study what Zechariah Stitchin talked about in regards to the 21st century BC and what happened then?
No, I didn't. What happened? What are you saying?
Okay, well, if you read his book, and I, if you have time, The End of Days by Zechariah Stitchin came out in 2007. Now, he goes on to talk about that in the 21st century BC is sort of like what's going to happen here in the 21st century AD. And he's talking about how the Sumerians were wiped out and some of the Babylonians were wiped out and these gods were wiped out due to this evil wind, quote-unquote, that came in and just destroyed everything. But basically, his interpretation is, to summarize, genetic modification, nuclear bombs that was created by Anu, and basically a lot of stuff that's happening now was happening then. And
That evil wind might also be the sun throwing a tremendous solar wind at us and causing a third of the trees and the grass to burn out.
Right. Right,
you're causing those days of heat.
Yeah, you're definitely right. Like I said, it's just his interpretation of, nuclear weapons and things like that, and just basically what you and I wonder about and the possibilities that basically mass extinction, but in this case it was a small scale due to the Sumerians and just that area, but in a larger scale that you and I believe in regards to the Book of Revelation, yeah, we're starting to see 60% die off due to man-made and natural disasters.
Yeah, even the Hopi Indians, I mean, half of the Hopis are like Christian-based, and the other are the animist-based, Kachina-Dahl type mentality. But one thing they do agree on is they need to build underground mud kivas or igloos underground almost immediately if they haven't done it already, to shield them for several weeks from the heat of the sun that's going to come and burn the surface of the planet. Now, I think if it's a coronal mass ejection or a super flare, an X7 or X70 or whatever, that it could impact one side of the planet facing the sun when it hits. But they're talking about several weeks, which means the whole planet's going to heat up, and that must mean something of longer duration. It might even mean that the sun goes dark for a period of time, as it does a phase state change and then reignites and becomes bigger in diameter. We do know that the Russian data has shown years ago that the sun has burned up half of its hydrogen fuel supply and as such is now subject to going to a helium-helium reaction or to the next stage of a star's evolution or aging. Maybe that will happen and fulfill the prophecy. I don't know.
Yeah, that's another thing. Oh, in regards, speaking of solar flares and all that, what is the two suns? Is that, are they saying that's Nibiru, or is that just another star that's going to, burn out, do something where it looks like there's two suns? Does that have anything to do with the Hopi prophecy?
Who says that?
I read an article, actually, I think it came from you, something about the two suns possibly visible by 2012.
Oh, are you talking about the one where the Chinese news article?
Yeah, I think it's Chinese. I mean, it's not that you wrote. I'm just saying that you had on your website the link off and had to do with possibly seeing two suns. I mean, I didn't know too much about it. That's the reason I asked you about it.
Well, I don't know about the two suns. Certainly, there's been supposition in the physics and astronomical community for years that we were almost a binary star system, and Jupiter would have been the other star had it ignited and gone into a fission reaction. But it might be that we are a binary star, and we have a dark dwarf star hanging out there somewhere. A lot of the star systems apparently do exist as binary pairs orbiting each other. I don't know why, but if that's the case, I would think that as the two stars, our sun and whatever its companion star is, as they get closest together as they can in an elliptical orbit, that there would certainly be changes in both of the sun's star surfaces, and hence in the orbits of the planets around them. Our solar system is not a perfect, happy, content little system that doesn't have any problems. I mean, there have been some big collisions. There's been a planet breakup or a portion of a planet breakup that formed the asteroid belt. There's been a thing about 300 to 600 miles in diameter that impacted the surface of Mars. And these things leave scars and on the planets that they do hit and in the orbits. And these things are signs of an unstable system. And in fact, I don't know whether you want to find too many just perfectly stable star systems out there with stable orbit. The fact that NASA reported, I think it was Pioneer 10 and 11, were slowing down as they were trying to leave our solar system on their long journey. They were being pulled back by this mysterious gravitational force that they had not accounted for. And that's what I've found is the containment field. It's a very weak gravitational field that contains atoms and forms them into ball or hollow ball shapes. And that weak force may be linking our sun to its companion star out there somewhere. And when I say somewhere, the influence of our star system, of the sun, it is a sphere called the Oort cloud. And that sphere, and where the Earth and the sun and all the planets, we're in the center of it. That sphere, if you were to travel from one side of it to the other at the speed of light, it would still take you over a year to traverse that big sphere of influence, even though the influence appears to be weaker as it gets out there. So either in that Oort cloud, or just on the other side of it, there is another star. If their assumption is correct, we have a binary star system, and it is causing perturbations or movements, irregular movements of chunks of asteroids and comets and things in the Oort cloud, and perhaps even in the Kuiper belt, which periodically dive in and fall into our sun and pass us by in the meantime.
Right. All right. I'm going to do a little bit of a recap here, and so for the people to kind of grasp all this, because I probably have a lot of listeners going, geez, Derek, what in the world did you talk about, and this and that and that, and there's others that say, yeah, I understand what you guys are talking about. And so to kind of recap real quick, we talked about the Sumerians and their beliefs where Earth was created by Nibiru, okay, and of course, as Christians, we believe that Jehovah God created everything. And so where I believe the Sumerians lie in regards of the creation, I personally believe that Nibiru, that story there, would have to deal with the cataclysmic event that C.I. Schofield talks about his notes in regards to Genesis 1 and verse 2, along with some other scriptures in Jeremiah and Isaiah. It's a possibility. I'm not going to be dogmatic and sit here and make a whole debate about it. But then from there, you got Genesis chapter 6, the fallen angels. The book of Enoch also talks about the fallen angels extensively, and that they procreated with women and created giants, and of course the flood came, and so there was some genetic altercations in regards to humans and food, and also with animals. And so also if you look at the wording in the King James, you find that not only were they there for the first interruption, but there was a fallen angel second interruption after the flood, because we see examples, especially Deuteronomy chapter 2 and chapter 3, that talks about these giants, these cousins or relations to the fallen ones. And so we find them throughout the place. They were all centralized, Stan, by Mount Hermon, like you said, and they found a lot of groves worship, Ashtoreth worship, and a lot of these planetary gods. If you look in Acts chapter 7, verse 43, you see that Stephen, the first martyr, told these Jews about how that the Old Testament, how them back in the day served these planetary gods, Rephaim and Moloch. And of course, we find that King Solomon in 1 Kings 11, he gave in his last days when he got older to 700 wives and 300 concubines. So he had 1,000 women. Boy, I can't even fathom that, Stan. But 1,000 different women and their different gods and goddesses, Rephaim and Moloch, and the star of your god. And so a lot of planetary worship going on there. And of course, the Babylonian, the Nimrod, Genesis chapter 11, which I think is like the first New World Order, because everybody had one language, one everything, and they wanted to build an actual tower to the heavens, because God, in essence, said, you know, what they imagine their heart, they're set out to do. So until God intervened, of course, scattered from there. And now, through Zechariah Sitchin's work, we find that there's this, that Sumerians had this planet Nibiru and 3,600 year orbit, that type of thing going on there. And of course, the story's there. So I believe that if you really study all that, it seems like it's a foundation for a future deception. Okay. Another thing too is a lot of people out there, these ancient astronaut theories, these people on History Channel would act like Jesus Christ is just a creation of the aliens, and the Bible is a continuation of Sumerian folklore or whatever you want to call it. But here's my question, Stan. This goes question for people out there that are kind of confused about that. My question is, why would a bunch of polytheistic people write a Bible that's monotheistic and condemns themselves?
Yeah, obviously that doesn't wash in supporting the other theories. So all right, Derek, in light of the things that are happening rapidly in fulfilling prophecy, what would you think would be the most important thing for people to do now in preparation for that?
Repent, and if you're not saved, to get saved, and trust in the Lord Jesus Christ, the Lord, personal Savior, who died on the cross for you, and to be faithful. Keywords: faithful and obedient till the end. Whether it be, I believe in the rapture. Until the rapture, to your death, whatever it may be, but be faithful. And you know, I don't want people out here listening to fear in regards like, oh my goodness, and you're scared. But to have that confidence in the Lord Jesus Christ, and to respect, yes, to respect what's going on. We're living some crazy times. We're living in much volatility. But I that's my most important thing I would tell people, is to get saved. And if you are saved and you're backsliding, to repent. And, you know, be prepared and have your bags packed and live your life like Christ can come back at any moment.
I agree. There are two kinds of preparation, just like the five wise virgins that had extra oil for their lamps. You prepare for the physical endurance that you have to, you know, be experiencing between now and the time the Lord does return for his bride. And then you have to prepare spiritually, because you don't know when you're going to die. You may die before the rapture, you may die before the tribulation, or during it. So you need to have both spiritual and physical preparation. That's why Holly has written a magnificent book, the Derek Prepare Book, 624 pages, huge book on physical preparation. And that alleviates a lot of your fears, because it explains a lot of things that you can or may need to do when infrastructure and food supplies and the community starts to break apart.
Yeah, I'm going to buy that.
And then the Cosmic Conspiracy book is the spiritual walk, but with scientific backing to all kinds of stuff, including the UFO thing and why we're having this problem here on the Earth, the angelic conflict and all that kind of stuff. So the two books are the physical and spiritual preparation together. And that's being one of the five wise virgins. You're knowing what you're looking for, but you got the oil in your lamp to keep looking, you know, and when everyone else has run out of oil and going back to town or whatever, you're there waiting and enduring until he comes.
Amen.
So those are two important things.
I agree. When I was saying, I did read your Cosmic Conspiracy. The other one that you mentioned, I haven't read yet, but I've heard a lot of great stuff, a lot of great things about it from people who has read it. So I'm going to have to buy that book.
Well, you know, Derek, we in the last month there's been such an overwhelming interest in that the preparation book that we've totally sold out of our case lots. We've only got about enough books left for another 2 or 3 days.
Oh, wow.
And, I mean, we've put in an emergency print order to our printers over in Kansas, because people are just suddenly waking up, and we were having family groups and just friend groups, you know, between 10 and 20 people at a time ordering case lots of the books. You know,
wow.
We could give them a discount. But, I mean, case lots. We were selling case lots up until 2 days ago when we ran out. We were selling case lots like you'd normally want to sell a single copy of a book. That's just incredible. It tells you that they're awake out there suddenly. And I do believe there's going to be a huge movement of the Holy Spirit, the Ruach HaKodesh, in the believing community of the earth, the Christian community, and that this will supply incredible abilities to the Christian church to perform miracles, you know, to raise the dead, to heal the blind, to heal the lame, to provide food where needed. These kind of things, I think, are going to be there. The things we read about in the Old or in the New Testament about what happened to the apostles, what powers they had, and they could be teleported as well by the Spirit.
Right.
These are Star Trek-like things that are going to come upon us, and I think this year. I'm waiting for a huge revival.
Stan, I 100% agree with you. I mean, we're living an age of tangibles in regards of we see the tangibles right now. That means from the devil's game plan, things happening. And I 100% agree with you. I believe the ministry of Psalms, the ministry of the book of Acts, that latter rain right before the day of the Lord is going to occur. And people you're going to see some stuff. It's going to shake some heads and eyes are going to be open. And you're 100% right. And, you know, another thing, too, is I always remember, I believe it's Acts chapter 11, where that one prophet, he stood up and he said, there's going to be a famine in the land. And guess what they did? They prepared to send preparations to Judea. And I believe, like I said, more and more people like you, Stan, is going to come up and say, look, you know, prepare. Like last year, I remember you telling me about that. You said, I got to get this book out. You know, I want people right before, you know, 2011, 2012. And guess what? The last 2 months has been the most weirdest months I have ever seen. I cannot and Stan, you've been right on the money, and you can't. I mean, this. I'm telling you, everything we've watched in the movie industry in my life for the last 30 some or 29 years has come in the past. And and Stan, your hard work and your dedication to the Lord, you know, you're right on the money. And I agree 100% with you, and I thank you for taking the time to be on this broadcast, and I'll definitely be sending you the link to this and here by, what it be, 4:30 your time, definitely, and it's going to bless a lot of folks because I've been getting emails left and right about all this stuff.
Before we finish up here, Derek, I just wanted to tell you about a couple of things that are happening in the United States that people may not be aware of.
Go ahead.
That there's been a lot of earthquakes in Arkansas.
Oh, yes.
In Oklahoma, and also up in a new earthquake chain forming up through the northwestern corner of the Yellowstone caldera.
Yes.
And there have been earthquakes in Chile as well, and in Easter Island off the coast of Chile. And that whole plate chunk out there offshore of Chile is under tremendous pressure at the moment. Earthquake down in Christchurch area, the South Island of New Zealand. These are all precursors of, or in evidence as well, of a planetary expansion. The Earth is going to expand its diameter even more than it has. That's why the sinkholes and the great cracks are appearing all over the world at the moment in the last 2 months, as you said. Beware of the Yellowstone caldera, a possible eruption there, or earthquake in the New Madrid area going through Arkansas over to Oklahoma. You can see it if you look at the Google map, the Google Earth map. You can see where the fracture can form, and there's a lot of quakes that are linking it. These are very important to watch, and I've put the pictures of the plots of these earthquakes I'm telling you about up on the website in the folder next to your name there that says Show Images, and people can go and look at that after they hear the recording. It's just unbelievable. You've got to pay attention to this. There's some big things in the works.
Oh, yes, there is, 100%, Stan. I mean, I encourage everyone out there every day to go to standeo.com because him and his wife does a great job posting these articles up, keeping you informed. Yeah, that's one thing. There was, 800-some earthquakes in that area, and also Indiana and all those places around there, Kentucky. I mean, a lot of stuff going on. I mean, just total increase. The Earth is just, ripping apart. So, yeah.
Look at all those mysterious sinkholes, those big round holes that just swallow up houses and buildings all of a sudden, and then the 4-kilometer-long tear that Holly's reported up there in the news, that we've got a photo up there she's put up there, and it shows that it's a wide crack in the earth that just suddenly appeared.
Yeah.
These things are evidence of what is coming. people need to really get their act together. Do all you can yourself and leave the rest to the Lord.
Amen. I agree, Stan.
And don't panic. Do not panic.
Yeah. Don't flip out. Whatever you do, don't flip out. I think the people will understand. We're doing this to warn people and to educate people, and we're not trying to scare anybody. We don't want you to be scared. We want you to respect the nature of what's going on, and you make the preparations. And my thing as a Christian, get yourself right. And if you're not saved, get saved, and trust in the Lord. Because you're going to have to trust in the Lord whether you want to or not, because things are going to get crazier. Other than that,
that's
Stan, I appreciate you coming on, and I like to keep in touch, and you are a blessing. The second time you've come on my show, and we're going to make a difference here in America.
I do think so. Thank you, Derek. Lord bless you now.
God bless you.
That
was Stan Dale from StanDale.com. Please check his website out. A lot of great stuff. Also, my friend Brian Moran, there's going to be a link in the description box here. Free ebook, 63 pages. Improve any area of your life, financial health, fitness, family, and relationships, even time freedom. Okay, he's a businessman, so he does deal with a lot of the corporate world. But it's just all about how to utilize your time. I'll tell you what, he may look like he's one of them corporate flashy guys, but I'm telling you, he's got a heart size of Texas. And trust me, just read it. It's 63 pages. I've already read it within like an hour. Okay? And to sign up, free book. And also, if you guys want to email me, I appreciate your prayers, your thoughts, anything. You can get a hold of me actually Facebook. So go to facebook.com/DerekDreamer. And other than that, I'm going to do some stuff probably here later. I'm really inconsistent right now. So marinate on this interview. I'll probably have some more interviews later. If you want to know more I'm doing, just go to Facebook. Add me if you can. My list is like 5,000. Sometimes it fluctuates a little bit down. But send me an email, whatever. So other than that, thank you for taking time to listen to this broadcast. If this broadcast is a blessing to you, please share with others. Put on YouTube, Google, Facebook, MySpace, Twitter. Just be a blessing. Thank you, and God bless.